I want to flag something here. I think that's quite interesting. Is what the Buddha calls the dead ends. Now, this dead end is the opening stanza, the opening line of what is known as the Four Noble Truths, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. The Four Noble Truths, probably the most famous, most popular, most core essential sutta in the entire Buddhist canon. It's called the Turning of the Wheel of Dhamma. And there's this interesting little stanza opening that sometimes gets taken out in various translations. And the Buddha says, I do not teach dead ends. I teach a path that does not lead to two dead ends. And usually the dead ends, we think of them as dead end of clinging for pleasure and the dead end of sort of aestheticism at the time of his day. But I think when we really look at it, when I look at it in my life, I like to think about it as I'm trying to avoid the dead ends of capitalism and the dead ends of poverty. Now, if we look at our world, capitalism certainly gives rise to lots of poverty. Capitalism is a poverty-inducing phenomenon, like it or not. So I like this because it makes me really feel part of my contemporary world. It's like, first of all, I can't get away from capitalism. But if that capitalistic drive to have more, to get, to need, to you know, if that becomes the driving mechanism, the Buddha basically just says it's a dead end. It doesn't go anywhere. It's not like bad or wrong. It's just a dead end. And, you know, I don't know how many, I haven't met a ton of people like this, but in my life, in my travels, I've met a handful of famous people and I've met a handful of people who have lots and lots of money. And to me, it looks like they've got their car parked at the dead end. Most of the people I've met who live in that space are not particularly happy. So that's one dead end. And the other thing is the dead end of poverty. Which, of course, you know, some people, you know, they don't choose that. I'm not trying to say that that's the case, but some people end up there. But some of us can have a kind of poverty mentality, which is a lot of times rooted in I don't deserve nice things, or I don't want nice things, or I shouldn't want nice things, or and a lot of it is this idea that money is bad and wrong, and like sort of money is not spiritual, and I'm a spiritual person and I don't care about money, or I'm not interested in money. That's also a kind of a poverty mentality. So then the question, well, where is the sweet spot, right? Is there a sweet spot? Like, I don't even know. And so I think it's also safe to say, as members of a secular contemporary world, I do want my basic needs met, but it's okay to want things, you know, a nice car, a new guitar, a pair of sneakers. Like, wanting things above and beyond my basic needs is totally okay and appropriate. And I think we have to kind of think about that a little bit. And actually in secular studies, you know, hedonic, there's quite a bit of happiness that comes from hedonic, but it's limited, right? It can't be the only driving force. And so when I think about when I think about my right livelihood as a practice, or this whole thing as a practice, I think now we're talking about a much broader perspective rather than what I do for money, right? But like trying to find this middle way, but also trying to see it as, am I thriving? Or am I just surviving? And so the Eightfold Path is a path of a path of thriving, of human flourishing, about being the best version of ourselves that we can become within the conditions that we find ourselves, within the racial, ethical, financial, social, all of the conditions that we find ourselves in, having some acceptance of that and doing what we can to thrive and to flourish and to live well and to do well in those conditions. As the kind of right view, that's the way to go about it. And being careful that we don't get backed into or collapse into this like survival mentality, fight, flight, feeling overwhelmed, worrying about money and stressing out too much, and not feeling like we are at the level of status we thought we'd be at this point in our life. And that kind of that survival mentality, which is really, really, I think, culturally it's kind of a cultural epidemic. I think a lot of people find themselves in that. I find myself in that, and I'm never in a survival situation. Like, I might be worried about paying my mortgage next month, or I might be like going to the grocery store and like actually looking at the price of the items before I throw them in my carriage. But that's not really what I'm talking about. That's not survival. That's just like, I need to clock that stuff. But sometimes I'll find my mind is in a survival kind of mentality, but I'm not actually in survival kinds of conditions. To be honest with you, I don't think I've ever been in a survival conditions my entire life. Really. But my mind is in survival mentality probably more often than I would like to admit. So I need to keep an eye on that, because that also is a dead end. And that becomes, and what happens is we create a pathology of lack, which I think is kind of the nature of this kind of dead end of poverty, is this kind of pathology of lacking, of just feeling, you know that feeling of just sort of lack? Yeah, just kind of like wanting more, but not knowing what that even looks like, or just feeling like not, just a quality of mind that's just not enough. And it's not always material. It's like, don't feel like I'm enough or I'm lacking in certain ways. And so then I'm not thriving. I'm actually in kind of a survival mentality. And a lot of times what happens for folks is you can get yourself in this feeling, in this kind of motive, this kind of low grade worldview, where we feel like life is just this thing that we have to like get through. You know, and sometimes you might feel that way at your work, right? Like, you know, it's that Thursday afternoon, you're like, I just got to get through the rest of this. And sometimes we do have to, you know, but we have to be careful that we don't just kind of hang out there. You know, we don't just kind of get stuck in that sense of that. And I think one of the things that contributes to this, which I talked about last time, is when we start thinking that our work and our survival are the same thing. That I like the idea that I sort of am my job, and I don't like my job. I don't really like me. And then that kind of gets into this kind of pathologizing of lack. So trying to remember that my sama kamanta, my right action, as it's known, my dharma work, is I think the best way to think about it. Is that I need to maintain a view and a perspective that is being more holistic on the whole way that I actually posture myself towards the world, in the whole way that I kind of approach things, so I don't get put in these kind of compartmentalized boxes for myself. And a lot of times, and I've had this conversation with many of my students, is a lot of times, and some of you might be there because COVID is kind of ripe with this, is a lot of times we find ourselves in some situations where we need to make kind of big choices around maybe quitting a job or letting go of a career, or finding ourselves in a kind of work situation, survival situation, where we feel trapped. You know, we hate it. And we keep doing it anyway. And, you know, maybe we want to, you know, you want to quit your job or go back to school, or you want to switch careers, or, and the older you get, the harder it is. I can tell you that much. I'm sure many of you know. But I think that we have to understand that if we're really going to tackle this world that we live in now from a Dharma perspective, is that there's an element of risk that I think we need to take. Because what happens a lot of times, I think, in the poverty mentality and what plays into the pathology of lack is if you find yourself in a situation where you're kind of having to settle, right? I hate this job, but I probably can't get a better one. I should just, you know, and it's that kind of like destructive gratitude where you're like, I should just be happy where I'm at, and I should just accept things as they are, and I should just, you know, not, you know, I shouldn't be so hard on myself, or I shouldn't be so complaining. I should be grateful for, you know what I mean? You know, that kind of inner dialogue where we're kind of settling. And we're not being true to ourselves. We're not being true to our Dharma work, where a lot of times it's like, you know what? I really don't like this. I don't want to do this anymore. And then I'm poised with the challenge of like, well, now to be creative and to engage the awareness, imaginative part of my mind, and think, well, we'll take a look around. Well, what else could I do? You know, what else could I do? And I think this is sort of, it sort of sounds funny to talk about this because it sounds like a conversation you should have with your career counselor, right? Like, this doesn't sound like a Dharma talk anymore, does it? But if you're anybody like me, then you probably find yourself struggling with these ideas from time to time. You know, and sometimes we transition into work that, you know, I feel very, very lucky in this conversation because I, you know, I left a career to move to Tennessee 10 some odd years ago, and I was able to have enough of maybe luck or good choices around selling houses and moving to cities where it was inexpensive. When I lived in Nashville, I took a year off and I just kind of taught meditation for free. And I ran programs in the Tennessee State Women for Prison for Women. And I ran all these Dharma programs in these places for free because I just kind of didn't really need the money because the cost of living was so cheap in Nashville. And having done that kind of generosity and that kind of work opened up this whole other career that I actually wasn't even really a career option. Like, you know, being a Dharma teacher is not really sort of the joke. It's like I've picked two really bad career choices, being a musician and being a Dharma teacher. It's not really well laid out. Like, if you go work at the auto dealership, it's pretty clear what your job is. But if you take this on, but I've been very lucky and I've been very grateful that I've been able to kind of fall into something that worked for me, but it was scary and it was risky. And it was that there was times in my life where it's like, okay, like I, you know, I'm in the conditions now where I can actually do this and I can actually pull this off. So when we think about how we are going to live in this world, and it's getting harder and harder, right? It's not getting easier. I think that we want to say yes to whatever the challenge or whatever the struggle might be around doing this rather than just kind of not wanting to think about it or really not really wanting to deal with it. Or getting into that kind of settling situation where we're just like, no, it's good enough. I shouldn't rock the boat. I should just bear down. And so the other thing I think that makes it more challenging for us is that there's been times in my life where the exit door wasn't right there. And sometimes we have to be in jobs and be in work and be in situations that we'd rather not do, but we just sort of have to, right? Like I'd actually, you know, have to pay my rent or my mortgage. And so part of it is like, well, what do you do in the meantime of that space? And so that becomes a whole nother area where you can, you know, Sandy actually did a really good job of bringing that up of like, okay, I don't like my job. I don't like what I'm doing. I don't like what I'm having to do to survive, but I need to be careful. I need to make sure that I'm doing other things in my life that do feel meaningful, that do feel interesting, that do feel important. So a lot of times, I said this last week, that the trick I found to this, the complexity of Dharma practice here, is a lot of times we have to find ourselves doing two things at the same time that seem kind of in contradiction with each other. Like on one hand, we maybe have a job and a work where we're having to do this thing of surviving because we, you know, we have to eat and we have to quote unquote survive. And at the same time, I have to be doing my Dharma work. I have to be sitting. I have to be looking at myself. I need to be trying to manage the fact that I'm totally a little bit unhappy with my situation. And doing those at the same time can feel really kind of weird or really kind of awkward. And when you think about, when you look at like the clinical research around what's known as burnout, which is a very rampant in our culture, people get burnt out of their jobs. You've probably been there. People tend to get burnt, of course, people who are working in the ER right now, man, I bow down to them folks. That would be my first, if I had a pile of money sitting around, the first donations I would make is to the frontline people who are dealing with the COVID situation. That is a huge, anybody working in the medical field right now is in a high burnout zone. People who work in mental health, substance abuse, frontline workers, EMTs, police, school teachers. And in the hallmark of being burned out is when you lose all sense of meaning or purpose in the work. You know, you work in a helping field, and like this happens a lot to therapists, is people who are really trying to help people with their minds. They feel like they're not helping anybody, and it just feels meaningless and hopeless, and they're just burnt out. They're just totally crispy. And so this is where having a contemplative practice, having a Dharma practice is so important, because if I'm feeling that in areas of my life, then I need to bring more attention and more awareness and more thoughtfulness into what are some things going on right now that are meaningful to me. You know, we have to engage in the parts of our life that are meaningful to us. Even if that only means we can do it for a few hours on the weekend, or, you know, maybe we're not happy about the amount of time that we get to spend doing things that are meaningful to us. And it could be something like, you know, going out to have coffee with a friend, or it doesn't have to be some epic calling. It just has to, as we go through our week, we need to make sure that we're doing things maybe a few times a week that we find to be meaningful. And then actually that we not only find those things, but we actually participate and we do those things. And that way you can also thrive and survive at the same time. And I think a lot of people are in this interesting rock in a hard place where they're finding that they're having a hard time surviving, and the overwhelm and the intensity of that is to a degree where you're not able to thrive, or you're not able to do this other thing. And it's our responsibility to kind of take that on, to know, like, even if it's just a little tiny bit, even if it's just a small thing, it doesn't matter what it is, that we're kind of positioned as human beings, we kind of need to do that. And I think when you think about these Sila Path factors of being authentic in our speech and how we engage in the world, and sometimes actually some of the most meaningful things that you can do is to go have an authentic conversation with somebody about how hard shit is right now. Or be the person on the other side of that conversation who can hear that. Some of the most meaningful things that we can do is just having an authentic or a heartfelt or a vulnerable conversation with somebody who cares about us. That might actually be enough. But then now that puts us back into right speech, or puts us back into finding our voice. And finding our voice turns out to be a very meaningful process for most people. So if you look at these three, they really support each other. You know, trying to find our voice and trying to understand what our work is, and trying to, this is probably what you find yourself dealing with on the day-to-day much more so than trying to have right view or right mindfulness or whatever, right? Like, this is some real on boots on the ground kind of stuff that we're dealing with. So as I said at the beginning, when you look in the early Buddhist canon, when you look at the early teachings, you do find very clearly that the Buddha does actually offer two paths. There is a renunciation path of monasticism that's really pretty clearly laid out, 2,500-year-old tradition of that. I'm totally supportive of that. I'm grateful that I've been the recipient of that, but I'm not going to do that. So when I look at the early teachings, it is why I'm kind of been very interested in the etymology of what do these words actually mean, as I'm trying to figure out what does finding my voice and communication and speech and doing my Dharma work and working in this world and having to survive, how does that look for a secular person living in contemporary society? Like, you know, I'm very interested in that. I really want to know how that works, because when I look to my Buddhist training and my Buddhist tradition for answers, I just don't find any. And so I think that as people of the world, living in the world, we need to uncover a Dharma path that's long forgotten. I'm not trying to make up new ideas or reinterpret this stuff. I'm actually really trying to go on what's there in the original texts. And again, have a much broader perspective on how these practices are relevant to the life that I'm living. Because for me, the one of the key things has always been is relevancy. You know, how is this relevant? You know, when I wake up in the morning and I have to get up early so I can sit and put lunches together and drive kids to school and make money and pay bills and deal with taxes and deal with the anti-vaxxers and, you know, all this stuff, right? Like, that's the life, that's the world that I live in. And it's helpful for me to have some kind of ethical backbone or some kind of framework for how I engage in that process in a way that feels like it's going to put me in a position to thrive, to flourish. So I'm not even really interested, this whole ending of suffering business. I've long given up on that. I'm not even interested in that anymore. I just want to thrive. I want to do well. I want to become the best person that I can. And I want to use these practices because I believe these practices give us the tools that we need to do that. But sometimes we have to think a little bit outside of the box. So that way we feel as though this is doable. So I do thank you for your participation in this. I am going to stop a bit early here to, I really love to hear any questions or thoughts or comments or confusions or anything you want to ask or say about these practices, because I would imagine you think about this stuff probably as much as I do or probably close to it. So thank you everybody for your time and attention this evening.